The National Archives podcast series, What is an API? And what might the Discovery API mean for services contributing data to Discovery? Presented by Alex Drozdov.
My name is Alex Drozdov. I'm enterprise architect here at the National Archives. And my job for the last 3 years was to design and then lead on implementation of the system which we call Discovery. My presentation is not about the system itself, but this is sort of introduction into API and what actually API is and what we've done in Discovery and how we introduced API in Discovery. So this is continue of the course started previously, and this is, as I said, brief introduction to API or API course 101. So I'm going to talk about API and the data. I'm going to talk about a little bit about Discovery architecture. I'm going to talk about how we get data into Discovery, how we structure data in Discovery to make it available, and then I will give a couple examples of using Discovery API. And I will finish with like strategic view of where we're going, or how we see and where we're going to take this Discovery in the next several years. So the first slide is about API in general. So what is API? It's an application programming interface. Basically, if you have on any computer, you have operating system, you have a piece of software like Microsoft Word or Excel or something else, and then there is a user interface. So the piece of a functionality sitting between application and operating system is an API. It makes job of programmer much easier. So rather than program against operating system or computer hardware, programmer operates with defined set of functions which easily readable by programmer, and he implements nice interfaces like we have in our publishing systems or image manipulation system. So the next thing is the web API, which appeared quite recently. This is because we were moving into the web and internet started to become more and more popular. So in terms of internet, we're still talking about communication between different systems. But these systems, we have some limits. And these limits, the first of all, it's a protocol. And the protocol is HTTP, which is basically text-based, when text-based messages are going back and forth between different computer systems. Now, because it's a text-based, we have to come up with something clever. And we are using XML or JSON, which is, again, quite recent. And if you haven't heard about JSON, this is JavaScript Object Notation, which makes it's much easier to operate with the data. So basically, web API is web services, but it's just much better and fancier to call it web API, especially in terms of Web 2.0. Sure, it's still the same. So instead of operating system, I put here Discovery, because that's what I'm going to talk about. Then we have, surely we have application, we'll use Discovery API, and then we have web browser to produce nice user interface. Now the good thing about web API is you actually don't need this bit called application, because your web browser is an application. So to communicate with Discovery system, you need to web browser, and you need to read XML or JSON. So this is simple as this. So and I will show you later how it's easy to access the data in Discovery system. Now, the core of any information system is the data. And what is happening in data recently, we hear about all this big data, and basically there is a data explosion on internet. Now, because of the different data sources and different companies and organizations are trying to make their data available and reusable, we're talking about mashups where people can get data from different sources, put it all together and present something new. And also what is important is the user-contributed content. Like in the systems or in web applications like Flickr, LinkedIn, Facebook, they all trying to open their doors for people to contribute so they can make their systems better and give something back. Now,
I thought that this is quite interesting because in retrospective, and computer age is quite young, so we're talking about 40, 30 years. So based on Moore law, we can predict the growth of this data on internet and in all our systems in the future. So we need to do something about it. So we cannot just store this data. We need to make them available. We need to get user feedback, and we need to make them better. Now, because it is quite important to understand a little bit how system works to start to use it. So that's why I want to talk a little bit about a discovery architecture. This bit is user interface. And user interface, you can load you into your browser, or you can start sending API calls through this entry point into the system. Now, our data store, where we keep all the data, and but I want to point that this is not regular database. This is no SQL object-oriented data store, and there is a reason behind this. And here we have all different data sources where we taking this data from before we put and process them before we put it into the discovery. So this is what we're going to interact with when we use API. Right, so at the moment we have these different data sources where we have relational databases, SQL Server, we have text input, Excel, TXT, comma-separated value, XML files. Then we have this bit here, which is quite sophisticated piece of technology, which takes data from all the sources and basically unifies them all as individual documents and put these documents in non-relational object data store. And what we use here, we use a data store called MongoDB. We have a very good relationship with our company, TenGen, which does support for this technology. This part of the discovery where we take user input, at the moment we just do user tagging. So users can come to our site for the discovery, and if they have an account, they can associate tags with pieces of information they see on the screen, and they can save these tags in the system, linked to their accounts, but then these tags available for everyone to look in the tag cloud, and then you can search for different tags. So it makes the system a little bit better because it adds some values to the information we store within the system. We store this information separately. We're not mixing anything. We keep it separately. We're just associating links between tags and the data object. Okay, now I need to talk about discovery data model because it's quite important to understand how discovery models the data before you start to retrieve this data from the system, if you will. So what we've done here, we came up with idea of so-called data object called informational asset. Now, because I know you know about archives, so what we've done, we said that we treat informational as an informational asset any level in any catalog. So if, for example, our catalog has 7 levels, we create an informational asset object for every level. The structure of these objects identical. So when we create informational asset, for example, series, it has exactly the same structure as informational asset we create for piece and item. Data is different, but the structure is the same. And these objects are all stored in this object data store, and the only thing which links this object to themselves or to each other is parent-child, not relational, but it's a link, it's a reference. So each object in the system can have a single parent or many children. And this is all. So this is data model is extremely simple. If you know catalog, if you understand catalog, then it makes sense to treat this catalog information as a piece of objects stored somewhere. Now, this is interface of the discovery. For those of you who are familiar with this, I can show that. And in such result, you have a number of these things. They're all informational assets. Now, this is a hierarchy view we've built in the discovery everywhere, and we can say that this is the parent, and this is all children of this parent. And this is the parent of all these children. And everything here is informational asset. It looks slightly different because we don't need to present all information here, but it doesn't mean that we don't store this information in the system. And this is details view of the informational asset, because what is important in the details view of the informational asset is the top part. The top part is URL you see in your browser. And the last sequence in this URL is an informational asset ID. This is unique identifier of this object in the data store. And this ID is persistent. It means that it won't change in the future, no matter how much system can change, or if we need to update data, if we update data for this informational asset, this unique identifier won't change. So I think now we're ready to go and try to use some of the features of the Discovery API, because this is enough knowledge to start using Discovery API to get some useful information out of the system. Right, so if you will go to this link, you will find out documentation. And this is all documentation we have about API. You don't need to know anything else. Everything you need to know is here. There are only 6 methods, and there are examples of URLs you need to send to Discovery to get back something useful. Okay, so we'll start from getting information about single informational asset. So this is the string you need to type in your browser, and here says XML, but you can replace it with JSON, and output will be different. So if it's XML, it will be XML output. If it's JSON, it will be JSON output. And the result will be one of those for single informational asset. Now, your question would be, well, how would I know all these IDs, because they are not obvious? Fine, well, I explain how to do it. It's because it's built into this API as well. So let's do something more interesting, something more sophisticated than this. So the first scenario is navigating hierarchy. Right, one of the methods of the API is search. So we give users ability to query for individual informational assets, or if you add at the end of the URL, query equals something, system will run search for you, and it will return search result. In this example, query is a serious number. Yes, system smart enough to differentiate between serious number and something else. If you will put something as a Boolean expression, as a query, yes, it will run Boolean expression and will bring back results. Now, obviously, we cannot give you, well, we have at the moment, we have 20 million objects in the database. If you will put star at the end, obviously, we won't give you all 20 million. We give 30 objects at a time, and then you can page this number in the between search and the query, number one, it says, well, I want first page of the result for this query. So it will be first 30 informational assets. Now, and this is your number. When you query it for C203, the number of results came in this XML, and then you will find your citable reference C203, and will find, oh, this is informational asset ID. Now, having this information is enough to query for this informational asset, or find out how many children this informational asset has, because we want to navigate hierarchy. We execute this query, and it comes with number 109. So we know, because we know that there are 30 results per page, so there are 4 pages of results, and we can send queries, give me first page, second page, third, fourth. And while you're navigating all these children, you can obviously get information. This is all children for this informational asset. Page number one for the children informational asset ID, with informational asset ID C3735. And you will have 30. And then if you put number two at the end, it will be second page and so on. Simple. Now, this is a little bit more, not this simple, but still obvious, I think. So this is the scenario when we do search. And as I said, a search could be a catalog reference, or it could be a search phrase, or it could be an expression. So what you do, you will build API request to search something. You'll send this request to API. API will bring back list of results, and then you can just page through this list of results and retrieve information about individual informational assets. So what we have right now, we built discovery platform, we've built data export API, and we started to engage users into using this API and getting back to us. The next plan is to build something called Data Import API, because what we want to do, we would like to get different sources. At the moment, we're using our internal sources, but we would like to use external sources to be sent or to be submitted through this API to our system to make it available for all users. So this is all external data coming in, get transformed into informational assets, and get available via API for reuse. The next step, what we would like to build user participation API, which would provide slightly or more functionality than we had at the moment, just a tagging of the records. We would like to have something where users could do annotations of the information. And in fact, we already developing this functionality, and if you will look for discovery releases in next month, this functionality will be available on the live system. And obviously, then we would like to get all this back to improve our data and to make this system better. Okay? Thank you.
This talk was recorded on the 7th of March 2013 at the National Archives, Kew.